You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right.
News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid and conservative and just plain right, like that dude just said. And yes, we go in all in on the truth right here. But sometimes we got to step aside too and recognize there's a story right here in our backyard, and it is worth talking about. Hey, Copper, I got a message for you on the board. Just check on that. But we gotta see the things that are happening all around us. So as I talk about Ukraine, and talk about the things that are happening in Montgomery, and talk about stuff in D.C., just understand this. Sometimes though, it's what's in our backyard that also needs to have some attention, because either A, it impacts our daily lives, or B, it's just so encouraging and worth knowing. And that really describes what I'm about to go into right now. So about a year ago, I got to know a gentleman here locally that many of you in the listening area already know, Mr. Ray Jones. And if you, like me, grew up running around South Huntsville, Jones Valley Farm was central to the area. Well, that's the family of Mr. Ray Jones. What I didn't know was the total impact that his father had had. And I thought it was interesting looking at a war in Europe right now with Ukraine to bring in the perspective of someone who was truly an architect in the Normandy invasion. So without further ado, let me just bring on my guest, Mr. Ray Jones. Mr. Jones, how are you doing today?
It's been fine, Phil. Hope you are.
Yes, sir. I'm doing good, and I appreciate your time today. I got a copy of your book. You gave it to me, actually, about your father, Citizen Soldier Carl T. Jones. That was your dad. By the way, a great read. I read it cover to cover. And I knew that we had the airport, the Carl T. Jones Field at the airport. I knew that we have, Carl T. Jones Drive. But I don't think I had ever realized to the full extent that your dad was really instrumental in the building of our community. Am I right?
That's true. He had a significant part of the war that he was involved in, and then he came back and helped rebuild the community.
I think, one of my favorite stories about building the community was when he kind of got the burr under his saddle to not let Redstone Arsenal be shut down, because at one point the U.S. Army was thinking about selling it off as surplus property, weren't they?
Well, that's true. After the war, it was on the market for four years. They were trying to sell it because it didn't need it anymore. And he and some other group of citizens got together and put some political pressure on Washington in order to try to save it for the community.
I mean, can you imagine Huntsville now if we didn't have Redstone? That'd be a whole different community.
It really would. We'd still be plowing cotton with mules, wouldn't we?
We would. And I don't. By the way, I don't know. Maybe it was some of y'all's fields that I used to go hunting arrowheads in. But yeah. Well, so Mr. Jones, when I read the story, I've got a military background, and so his military experience has really resonated with me, because it's not just me; it's been generational in my family. My grandfather, General McBride, was post commander at Redstone Arsenal back in the early 70s. And, wow. And he had been a World War II veteran himself. And so I read about your father's story. So when the war kicked off, a lot of people forget that we actually did have the enemy on U.S. soil, and that was in Alaska, the Aleutian Islands. And your father was one of the commanders of the troops that were stationed in the Aleutians, correct?
That's correct. He was commander of the 167th Combat Engineers here in Huntsville and scattered throughout North Alabama. And they mobilized them first. I don't know why they picked them first, other than Alabama starts with an A. And they were looking for somebody to, some combat engineers to go to Alaska. They seen them up there, and they were up there 3 years, and their job was to build roads and bridges and airfields in order to island hop out to Attu and Kiska. The Japanese had already invaded Attu and Kiska and then set up bases there, and we wanted them back. I don't know why we wanted them. There's nothing there, but we wanted them back. So that was their job, was to go out there and try to do what they could to facilitate the movement of troops and equipment out there so that we could get those islands back. And he was up there 3 years, and he got some interesting stories in the book about when he was up there. And they had a bear attack and a lot of other things that are interesting in the book to write about. I have his journals. He was an engineer and kept meticulous records, and And I have his journals of all the time he was in the army, in the war, and so that was real helpful in writing the book.
Well,
the book actually began in 1804 with the coming of the first white man to Madison County.
Yeah.
The one to live here, his name was Isaac Kreiner. And Isaac Kreiner was my fifth great-grandfather. And he follows him, and the book follows him through the Civil War, World War I, and then my dad's experiences in World War II. After 3 years in the in Alaska, they relieved him. He thought he had messed up some way, but they sent a plane to get him and eventually flew him to Warminster, England. And he met his old commanding officer that he had had there in Alaska, General Corlett. And he asked, General Corlett said, "Carl, we're going ashore in Normandy in about 90 days. And says, "You're the only living engineer officer the United States Army has that's planned an amphibious landing. You've done two, it had two in Kiskum. So we're going to lock in this manor house, and you can't leave unless you die. Says you're going to have to stay here and write this operations order. After our men are ashore, we'll send you all ashore, but not before then.
Wow.
Want you to work every hour that you can. We feed you and sleep you. If you get sick, we'll treat you, but you can't leave this castle for fear that the word leaks out." He went ashore at D+4 and fought across northern France, St. Lô and the hedgerow country all across northern France, into Belgium, and then Holland. It's a very interesting story at Holland. And then he went on into Germany and was one of the first ones into Aachen, Germany, near the end of the war. Hitler had given up by then. Then he came home, and when he came home, you can imagine what Huntsville was like, because all of our leadership had been all fighting the war. He had been gone 5 years. And
yeah.
Our leadership was struggling to try to get things going. He was a whale of a leader, thought 10 years ahead of time of everybody else. And so he helped get Huntsville on his feet and was instrumental in he and General Toftoy and bringing Von Braun to Huntsville. And you know most of the rest of the story.
Well, Mr. Jones, I mean, I think that one of the most amazing things there is here we are, we're looking at war in European countries right now. And some of these same countries were touched by World War II. You know, Poland's right next door to Ukraine. But the thing that people don't even realize sometimes is stepping back into your father's World War II service. So he helped. He was the architect of two amphibious landings in the Aleutian Islands against the Japanese, Attu and Kiska. And then you said it a moment ago, but to me, I'm sitting here looking at your book on page 106. It says that General Corlett literally told him, like you just said, that he was the only living engineer officer in the entire U.S. Army who had ever planned a successful amphibious landing. And so he was handpicked. This Carl T. Jones from Huntsville, Alabama, was handpicked by the, you know, commanders at Schaeff to be flown to England to help become one of the architects of the greatest amphibious assault in the history of the world. That's pretty amazing when you get down to it.
Well, it really is. He was an amazing man. There's no doubt about it. Mm.
Well, I read the book, and that part just got all over me. Now, my grandfather wound up, he was with the 18th Airborne Corps, 82nd Airborne, and then the 18th Airborne Corps, and he was a glider rider, but he wound up fighting his way across Europe, too, and I can't help but wonder if they ever crossed paths at some point, especially when Granddaddy wound up being stationed at Redstone, but
yeah, I
imagine they
either.
Did at some point.
I sure don't know either. I know there's a lot of people involved about that time.
Well, there are. Now, let me ask you this. I mean, that's your dad. What do you think your dad would be thinking right now if he could watch world events in Europe, knowing that he had already helped, you know, put together the plan that rescued Europe back in the day?
Well, you know that Patton, which my dad thought a lot of Patton, but you know Patton said we ought to fight the Russians while we're over here, got the army over here,
because yeah.
Sooner or later we'll have to fight them. I don't think the mindset has changed a whole lot in those length of time, but it's a shame that they're doing what they're doing. The ones that I really feel sad about are the children and the
yeah.
families and them
yeah.
trying to flee their homes. Those are pretty good people in Ukraine. And the only problem is that they're having to be living on a piece of land that Putin wants, and so he's going to go get them. I think it's unconscionable what he's doing right now.
Well, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. And then, you know, I know you and I share some perspectives on, you know, conservative policies and wishing we had, you know, different people in office at times. But it's an amazing time that we live in. But I just want to thank you for coming on today. I read the book a long time ago, back when you gave it to me, and I got to thinking about this war we're seeing right now. And I thought, I think the people on this radio show need to hear that someone right there in their own backyard was literally one of the architects of the Normandy invasion. And I think that flies under the radar for most people. But Mr. Jones, I appreciate you and your family, and thank you for coming on today.
Thank you so much, Phil, and appreciate what you're doing. We need all the conservative leadership influence that we can get right now, because we sure don't have it in Washington.
Well, there you go. All right, Mr. Jones, I hope to see you soon, and you have a great
day.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care. How about Copper grab the mic? How about that?
Yeah.
How cool was that story?
It's great to have local stories like that.
Well, it's great to have them, but it's also, I mean, that there ought to be like a statue somewhere. I guess truthfully, there are roads and airports named after him. But
true.
But can you imagine being handpicked by Eisenhower's staff to be flown in from Alaska because you're the only person in the entire U.S. Army who's ever planned an amphibious invasion?
That is really cool.
That is way cool. All right, take us to a break, Copper. We'll come back from that, folks, and maybe wrap up that a little bit more. And then move into some other stuff here on the Triple Dipper. Things you might want to know. Things, you know, three stories, we always say, that you got to know. Well, we'll talk about them when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. We'll be right back.